order. It is now 8:05, and we do have a quorum, which we have Representative Robinson, Representative Green, Representative Porter, Representative Willis, and myself, Representative James. We do have a change in the agenda order. We'll be hearing them. SB 266 is first. House Bill 438 will be second, and 443 will be third, and House Bill 110 will be number four. So the first one up is the Creamer's Field Goose Classic by Senator Frank, and we have looks like a staff person here to present this for us. So thank you very much, and give us your name and so forth, and let's hear about this bill.
Okay. Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Allison Gordon, aide to Senator Steve Frank. Thank you for this opportunity to testify on Senate Bill 266. This legislation does not create a new gaming law. It simply amends current law to include the Friends of Creamer's Field among those who are authorized to operate and administer a Goose Classic. A Goose Classic is a game of chance where the participant has an opportunity to win a cash prize for the closest time, guessing the closest time of arrival of the first goose to Creamer's Field. Currently within the Fairbanks area, the Fairbanks Montessori Association is the only group that may operate and administer a Goose Classic. This association has found that with its small volunteer group, they're unable to put on a Goose Classic, and subsequently there's never been a Goose Classic in Fairbanks. Fairbanks Montessori Association and Friends of Creamer's Field have worked to form a contract in which the two organizations put on the classic together. This legislation would also allow either group to operate the game separately if one should decide not to take part. The department supports this legislation, and I would urge members to pass 266 from the State Affairs Committee. Thank you for again for the opportunity to testify.
Well, thank you. Anyone have any questions or comments for the sponsor? We have on teleconference David Lambert.
Yes, I'm Dave Lambert. I'm here representing Montessori, Fairbanks Montessori, and Friends of Creamer. And she put it pretty well, and I'm just here to answer any other questions you may have, and we're looking forward to holding the event.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Lambert. Is there any questions, more questions for the sponsor or Mr. Lambert? Then what is your pleasure? Have a motion to move this bill out? Representative Porter?
Okay, Madam Chair, notwithstanding the cruel and unusual punishment of somebody having to sit in the field waiting for the first goose, I would move that we move SB 266 from committee with individual recommendations and zero fiscal note.
The motion on the floor is to move this bill with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note. Representative Robinson?
Can I just ask a quick question?
Sure you can.
Maybe, I don't know who here can answer it for me, but we keep having all these different kinds of classics. Why is it we can't just amend the law to allow the department to, as appropriate, agree to these things? I don't know if there's anybody.
Well, there is a possibility. You should talk to Gary Davis. He has the same concerns about this issue, and I suspect that as we keep adding and adding in these, that something like that will happen. But it isn't there yet, so that's not a decision we can make on this specific bill.
Okay. I didn't know the answer to that. So.
And before we go and I check to see if we have all the votes for this, moving this out, I wanted to respond to Representative Porter's concern about somebody watching for the geese to come. Lots of people already do. Anyway, is there any objections to moving this bill out with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes? Hearing no objections, then the bill is moved. And thank you very much for coming. The next item that is up will be House Bill 438, Recording Index Documents by Location. Representative Bryce.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for your scheduling of House Bill 438. Over the years, the mining industry has used what has been called a CARDEX system to keep up with, you know, various pieces of information relating to location of land claims, that type of stuff. The state has stopped funding this system as of, I believe, last year. Well, unfortunately, there's a large void within information that's kept by the recorder's office, namely the location of people's titles and claims. What this bill would do simply is to add the word location into what the recorder's office shall maintain in an index system. I mean, that's pretty, that's about as simple as it gets, I do believe, Madam Chair. If there are any questions, I'd be more than happy to answer.
Anyone have any questions of the sponsors? Thank you. Do we have anyone on teleconference that wished to testify on this bill today? Do I have anyone here in the room that wanted to testify?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes. Okay, would you please come up?
Madam Chairman,
give us the little information that's on the table there, which you need to provide us before you start giving us your testimony. Thank you.
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Sharon Young. I'm state recorder in the Recorder's UCC component of the Department of Natural Resources. And the recorder's office has historically maintained only a grantor-grantee index, which is mandated, and as a courtesy has always attempted to maintain a location index, which is not mandated. And this has grown to provide a number of informational gaps within the system, as Representative Rice has mentioned, that the location information within the recording system in general is incomplete. Although within the last year or so, we have attempted, because of our lower volume levels, to index all of the locations that are provided on the documents. Given the fact that the volume levels are lower than they have been in the past, we are able to do this without additional funding. And we do believe that the location index as a mandate would provide a more comprehensive and complete public record, not only for the mining community, but for the thousands of other individuals who use the system each year. And I would be happy to answer any questions about the system in general.
Okay, do you have any remarks about the fiscal note that's attached here?
The fiscal note is, again, based solely on a volume increase. If the location index remains as a discretionary function, when our volumes go up, the location index by necessity becomes a secondary function. And because we are mandated to do certain other things, we would have to forego that. And in the past, it has been foregone. The fiscal note anticipates or assumes a 5% annual volume increase after FY97, and the funding that would be necessary to support that level of that volume level and provide the location indexing as a mandate. It assumes that FY97 would be the same as this year with no volume increase.
Okay. I guess, first of all, the question is, we have two fiscal notes. One is for the information resource management component, and that one shows a personal services of $70,000 in fiscal year 97. And then the recorder's office, UCC component, doesn't have any personal services in fiscal year 97, but begins in fiscal year 98. And continues, and then there is an increase in that. It looks to me like the increase is only intended to be regular merit and step increases. It doesn't look like that it's necessary, meaning more people.
It's actually,
correct?
It's based on current year salaries and only is assuming a 5% growth in volume. The personal services associated with that growth is what's represented here. And I might also add that the representative from the information services section is also here and would be able to address the fiscal note from that section.
Okay. It has always been, though, that this has been done as a courtesy from the recorder's office, not from the information resource management team.
Right. And their fiscal note is addressing a broader scope of integrating this information with other database information within the department, which is one of the things, the desirable things, as I understand it, that the mining community has been desiring.
Well, and I understand what they need, but what I was trying to determine here, is it going to be kept on a CARDEX system, or is it? Are you planning to do some other way of tallying up this information?
I can only address that from the recording office standpoint, and we would not be doing anything different than we are right now, which is indexing the information into the system as it appears on the document. From the information services standpoint, they would be providing some sort of an interface with some of the other information, and you'll have to ask them whether it would replace CARDEX.
All right, thank you. Anyone else have any questions? Representative Green.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. On the recorder's office, we talked about the fact that it was escalating at about $4,000 a year, but if I look at the positions, I see in 78, one full, one part, then two full and one part, two full and one part. I don't think I quite understand how you add positions without escalating more rapidly than you're showing.
The positions, again, this is strictly based on the recording volumes that come in. Mm-hmm. And recording volumes, I think, historically have averaged about a 4,500 to 5,000 document increase substantiates a one full-time person. Our volume statewide has been averaging around 200,000 documents a year. And again, this is only assuming a 5% growth.
Follow up, President Green?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I hear what you're saying, but then why would you require twice as many full-time employees if you're only increasing at about 7% in your money, but you've doubled the amount of personnel?
I'm Representative Green. I'm not sure I understand the question, but
I'm looking under positions on your fiscal note.
The positions with a $77,000 need in personal services to cover a 5% volume growth, that represents one full-time person and one part-time person. In the next year, if there is a subsequent 5% growth, the dollar need goes up to $81,000, again based on today's dollars. The positions go to two full-time and no part-time.
Okay, well, I'm not quite, I understand your math, but okay, let's take 98 and 01. Now, you're saying 77,500 accounts for one full-time, one part-time. And $12,000 later, with inflation, you're saying that two full-time and one part-time only accounts. I'm assuming then that one full-time is only worth $12,000.
I think, if I could respond there, Representative Green, I think that they haven't done a finite job of doing the fiscal note, and I don't think that this person has done the fiscal notes. Is that correct? Is it someone else that done it, or have you
done
this?
Well, I have prepared it based on the assumptions, and the only assumption that we could use that was halfway reasonable was the 5% growth per year.
And I understand what you've done here, but I think it doesn't calculate out, and I would suggest that I don't want to hammer on this fiscal note, however I think it is flawed, because that will be handled when it gets to the Finance Committee. But the fiscal note is a very important part of this issue, is because the whole issue is around funding, mm-hmm. as opposed to, and I know how much people have been depending on this service, and I'm here to want to support that service. What I'm wanting to do is to make it financially feasible. Okay, does that answer your question, your concerns too?
On that point?
Yes. Okay, Representative Olgan?
On that point, I noticed that there's not a finance referral on this.
It has to have one. It has fiscal notes. So it will pick one up.
There is. It's not another one, Bill.
No, I notice it, but when it has a fiscal note, it will pick up a finance referral. Representative Porter.
I was just going to add that if it is the will of the committee to pass this out of committee, I would suggest we notify the clerk's office that it's picked up fiscal notes, that it needs to go to finance, and that this committee has a concern over the validity of the fiscal notes.
Okay, we can do that. Representative Green?
And that doesn't sound like much, but I don't like to harp on it. I think you made a very succinct statement when you said that it does hinge somewhat on the fiscal note. Last year, the budget cut out the state geologist position, which was less money than this, on a budget-saving measure. And my concern is that if we're adding it back in here, there's going to have to be some real justification for it.
My concern may be a little different. I don't want a fiscal note to kill this bill. And so that's my biggest concern about the issue. So anyway, thank you for your testimony. And then we have someone else who wants to testify.
Morning, Madam Chairman.
Yeah, give us your name and so forth. It's on a sheet there in front of you.
My name is Richard McMahon, and I'm the section chief for the Land Records Information section at Department of Natural Resources. And we are responsible for the maintaining the land administration system and the state status plat. We also have the Geographic Information System project in our group. And I was a participant in the CARDEX meetings that were referenced earlier, and there was quite an interest in the ability to locate recorded documents by index, by location rather, because, for example, when the Geological Survey that Representative Green mentioned publishes the new maps as a result of their AeroMag surveys, one of the immediate questions is what are the legal positions around some of these new potential areas. And the CARDEX system is a paper-based system, and to answer the question that you raised, our proposal does not replace the CARDEX system. What our objective is to expand the indexing so that we have a standard, a consistent ability to locate these recorded documents by location. So we've got the DNR LAS system, which has all the mining records in there, as well as many, many other. There's over 2 million transactions accounted for in that system. We also have access to the Bureau of Land Management system. We've been working closely with them, and we can tie in the federal records there. And what we'd like to do is to provide this kind of expanded functionality by having an index system that uses a common key approach. And the fiscal note is for one computer programmer. We estimated to be about a 12-month job, and there's also some funding there to pay for the Department of Administration mainframe services.
Okay, I assumed that when I was asking these questions that there was some computer programming that needed to be done to do this. That's why I'd asked the question of the previous person as to whether or not this was going to be done on CARDEX or was there some other method that was going to be used, and so I suspected that that was the case. Anyway, thank you for bringing that forward. Are there any questions of this testimony? Thank you very much for your testimony. On teleconference, we have in Fairbanks Mary Nordale.
Yes, Madam Chairman. Thank you very much. I'm here to testify in support of House Bill 438. I was a member of the so-called CARDEX Committee, chaired by Earl Beislein, who would be here, but he had a conflict, and he authorized me to speak in his behalf. I want to thank you very much for hearing this bill. It's an extremely important bill for the mining industry, and I assume that as development occurs throughout the state, it will become equally important to other resource-based industries, because it is probably the only way in which we can, in a modern fashion, maintain accurate land records. As you know, the CARDEX system is a hand-operated hard copy system that keeps an index, an historic index, of mining claims throughout Alaska. The system is a good one. It works. It's extremely important. But the problem is that it is available only in Fairbanks. And mining companies and miners in other areas of the state who need the information maintained by the CARDEX system have to come to Fairbanks in order to do the search or hire somebody to do it for them. And the peculiarly local nature of the access has been a matter of some real concern to the mining community in Fairbanks. And with the help of Richard McMahon and Sharon Young and Wendy Wolf, Jill Thompson and his people, we put together a proposal and a plan for developing a geographical-based index for state land records. And with the cooperation of BLM, hopefully it would include federal records as well. the only way to maintain the kind of information that will give resource-based industries the kind of information they need about land status in Alaska is through a geographical-based location index. And I say that's the only way, largely because of the real difficulty of doing location research through the grantor grantee indexes. It's one thing to do it for those in those areas where communities themselves and the land records are rather well developed and the chain of title is pretty well established. And the title companies maintain good plans on our location index basis. But for the rest of the state, it's not that easy. And mistakes in land status can lead to legal problems, economic problems, all kinds of problems. And it has an tendency to impede development. I've listened to the discussion about the fiscal note, and I should like to point out to you that the required office statewide pulls in about twice as much money as it spends. And so, and it's based on volume, of course, and documents recorded. And so it is really a fee for service that is a generous generator of revenues considering the scale of its operation. And I would hope that those of you who are concerned about the fiscal note recognize that as the state grows, the volume of recording increases, and of course the recorder's office is fully supported so it would not really contribute significantly to the state's deficit, which I'm sure you know, I'm well aware. Thank you very much. I'd be delighted to respond to any questions.
Thank you, Mary. Appreciate you being here today. Is there anyone else that wanted to testify on this bill? Committee have any Representative Olgan? I also incidentally want to put on the record that Representative Olgan's been here for a while and Representative Ivan is here, so we're 100% in attendance now.
Madam Chair, the last witness that spoke, Ms. Nordale, said that there was program receipts generated around the recorder's office that would offset the fiscal note, and maybe we could find out if there are possibility of if the system is put in place, will it self-generate enough revenue to offset the fiscal note?
Well, in response to that, Representative Olgan, I think what she did say is the same as it is in the Department of Motor Vehicles. The fee for services in the recording office provides more money than what is spent by the recording office. Therefore, they're more than taking care of the cost of doing the recording business by recording fees. What actually happens with that money is it goes into the general fund, and that's the general fund that we talk about. If there is an increase in recording fees, which there is probably going to be in this gradual increase of what they have to do, there would be recording fees to go with it. Those recording fees would normally just dump into the general fund. And those increase in recording fees would not support this fiscal note. It would be that we would have to take some of the money we're currently using in the general fund to be able to fund the fiscal note, whatever that happens to be.
Yeah, I understand, Madam Chair, how that works. I just was wondering if with this new system that we're talking about putting online here, where we're going to a digital system rather than a manual system, be available statewide, would there be anticipated increase in revenues if this was available statewide from use, say, or Juneau from miners in Southeast and miners in my section of the world and whatnot, that would generate additional revenues that would offset this? And I'd maybe like to see if we get that an answer to that
we
question.
We might have to bring back the lady from the recorder's office to respond to that. It's my personal belief that there is no fees for using this information. The fees are from the recording documents that creates the basis for the information. Representative Porter?
In looking at the fiscal notes themselves, the one from the recorder's office in UCC does not have an offset of revenue, mm-hmm. that basically zeroes out their fiscal note. The fiscal note from Information Resource Management has 90,000 that is not offset, and then additional 10 for the out years. So, as I read these things, the fiscal impact to the budget is predicted to be $90,000 in 97, fiscal year 97, and an additional 10 in the out years.
Could you respond to the one question, or the concern is that on the additional revenues that would be for fee-for-services, these people that utilize these location documents or these Cardex that has been in Fairbanks, they don't pay anything for utilizing that. Isn't the payment just come in from the recording fees of the documents that supply the information for the Cardex system?
Madam Chairman, yes, that is correct. The Cardex system is a separate system from the recording system that would be affected by this particular bill. The recording fees are generated by the recording of documents, and access to the documents is free in all locations.
Okay, and so based on the other gentleman's testimony that we had after you, who was from the other department,
Information Services,
is it possible, and is this your view, that the information can be picked up off of the recording documents and tally up a location information for people statewide via computers, because they won't be doing this on a hand-posted Cardex system?
I would have to defer to the other gentleman, but it's my
maybe
understanding.
Maybe I should have you both up here at once. Could you come forward, too, with question you on this?
Madam Chair, I may not have answered that question clearly enough. We are providing an index system and not a replacement for the documents themselves. So we would be able to identify that there are a number of recorded documents in a given location that someone was interested in, and it would have the book and page references so they could go to the recorder's office and then identify those cards that they need to pull and make copies of. We are not, with this fiscal, providing electronic images of those documents themselves. And to put that in a bit of perspective, in the Cardex meetings that were held, consultant said that what the research that he can conduct in approximately 1 to 2 hours using the Cardex system could take 3 to 5 days using the chronologic system based on the book and page in the recorder's office. So there's a bit of perspective on the value. So we are helping to locate, reduce that amount of research time so they can then find those book and page documents, but not the documents themselves.
Yeah, I might not have made myself clear. I didn't visualize that happening either. I was interested in the location. For mining particularly, and then other resource development in the state, being able to identify an area of the state and locate the ownership and status of that is extremely important. And if we're going to do anything to encourage resource development in the state, we really do need to have that information readily available. And I support that wholeheartedly. Anyway, Representative Ogun.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Do you have the ability or the authority to possibly charge for this service? I mean, apparently this information is available now. What I'm looking for is a way to possibly fund this service, and possibly industry would be willing to pick up a portion of it if they're using it. Obviously, it's important to the industry, and you know, as you know, we have a budget situation where if we lose something, if we add a fiscal note here, it's got to come from somewhere else. Recognizing the importance of resource development, would there be some kind of way that you could offset the expenses by some sort of user fee?
My understanding is that all the necessary authorities to institute fee schedules are in place. That's not a problem. And Mary Nordale may want to comment on the willingness to pay question.
Okay, we'll hear from Representative Green, had his hand up, and then we'll ask Mary. I'm sure she's still online.
I thought I understood it. Now I'm not quite so sure I do. What I've heard is that the receipts are coming in anyway, and they exceed the amount of costs.
The recording fees are coming in from the documents that are recorded.
Right, and that this this appears to be revenue neutral in the recorder's office because, in fact, you have more money than is necessary for this.
That's correct.
Would you have that more money even if those, if this bill weren't here?
Yes.
Okay.
If
so
the volume
what
increased.
You're really saying with this fiscal note ends, you can do this because you have more money going into the general fund now than you need to cover the cost of this. Okay.
Mary, are you online?
I think that's getting a little bit confused, but the mining community in Fairbanks, and I think that I can speak to in behalf of mining community elsewhere in the state, have sought ways in which to fund one of the maintenance of the cardiac system as a hard copy historic record. And they have always supported fees for the recording of their required documents, such as location notices and assessment notices, or labor, annual labor notices, so as to support the information that the industry needs. The problem that we get into when you deal with sort of special fees is the categorization of the document as it comes into the recorder's office, as I understand it, and the difficulty that may be encountered in failing to categorize it in the proper way. In other words, there's a mining industry document or a timber industry document or some other kind of industry document, as opposed to a deed. And, you know, you can get a deed that's a mining document as well as a deed that's some other kind of document. And so, you know, if you want to set up a category for additional fees for recording documents such as location notices and affidavits of annual labor and other documents relating to the mining industry, that would be fine. The industry would support it as long as it's not exorbitant, because there's no reason for the kind of base data that the recorder's information generates to be limited simply because of the kinds of industries or people we're using it. You know, we don't set categories for use of the information through the grantor grantee index, and this is just another add-on of what I consider to be essential information. But yeah, we'll support a reasonable fee increase.
Thank you. I'm a little distressed at what I brought up here when I started on the fiscal notes, because actually, you know, going to my back to my philosophy of the State Affairs Committee, well, I shouldn't be arguing over fiscal notes, but I have to make it perfectly clear the reason that I am so concerned about the fiscal notes is I know that when the bill leaves this committee and goes to the next or gets to the finance, that the fiscal note is going to be a very important part. I don't want this bill to be killed because of fiscal note, and I need to have good arguments, you know, for what are the benefits of having this. And so I really appreciate you going through this this little discussion on the fiscal notes. Representative Ivan?
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, what the intent of the bill is, I understand, and it's good. But does it require a statutory authority to do it? Couldn't the administration go forth with it, or what is the...
Well, it has been taken out of the budget, basically, and in the budget process has been, I think it was that last year or the year before, and so now, because it was not a statutory requirement, it was only a voluntary effort on the part of the people in the recording office in Fairbanks to keep this information for the people who used it a lot and have been depending upon it. It's a very valuable tool. And they would like to have it be available statewide as well as just in Fairbanks, number one. And number two, since it was not a statutory requirement and the budget was cut, there's no way to get it done. And, you know, without a lot of trauma. So what the effort of this bill is to make it a statutory requirement so that... If the I suppose it's still possible for them to not fund it, but I think that this will give us a little bit of impetus to be sure that we have enough money to be sure that it gets done. That's the bottom line. Then we have to decide how much money is this, and that's the issue that I want to be able to argue when if I have to do any kind of support in the budget process over this issue, which we're all going to be arguing in the budget process as it goes forward, then I need to have some real good substantial information, which everybody's been able to provide me today, and I appreciate that. So, anyway, is there any other questions or comments on this bill before we move it out?
Madam Chair?
Yes, Representative Willis.
For a motion?
I am.
I would move House Bill 438 with the accompanying fiscal note with the individual recommendations and attached to it whatever concerns that have been expressed by the members previously.
Okay, relating to the fiscal
yes.
note. Yeah, I could send a little note along with this and say that we are concerned about the validity of the fiscal note, and so it'll get more attention. I can also talk to the Finance Committee about it. The motion on the floor is to move this bill out with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes and a note expressing the concern about the validity of the fiscal note to the next committee referral. Is there any objection? And then the bill is moved.
Thank you, ma'am.
For the information of anybody that may have been here waiting to hear House Bill 110, that will be rolled over to the next meeting because it needs some more work.
Sure.
Yes, Representative Ogun.
I have the pleasure of the chair to introduce a special guest today in the committee.
Sure.
We have a Mr. Gabe Weaver back over here in the corner who's a winner of my student at Juno contest. He's a senior at Colony High, and he's going to be my shadow for a few days and find out what the legislative process is about. So I'm real happy to have him here today.
Well, thank you. It's nice to have you.
You're on camera. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Please take one and pass it down as a sponsor statement for this bill.
Okay, the next bill up then is House Bill 443, Increase Motor Fuel Tax, which is a governor's bill. And here we have Sam Quito from the 3rd from DLT to present the bill.
For the record, my name is Sam Quito, the 3rd. I'm representing Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. I'm here to testify on House Bill 443. I'm going to be reading from a prepared statement. I think it's been passed out to all of you. Basically, the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities supports House Bill 443. More specifically, the department supports an increase in highway and marine motor fuel taxes if the taxes will be dedicated to the mode from which the taxes were collected. House Bill 443 was introduced at the request of the Long Range Financial Planning Commission as a component of an overall long-range fiscal plan. The bill proposes an increase in the highway motor fuel tax from the current 8 cents per gallon to 22 cents per gallon, and an increase in the marine motor fuel tax from the current 5 cents per gallon to 8 cents per gallon. The bill also repeals the exemption currently in place for the use of gasohol. The Department of Revenue estimates that even without an increase in motor fuel tax, the lost revenue from the use of gasohol will be in excess of $6 million for FY97. The highway fuel tax increase will provide the department with revenue, which will enable the department to increase maintenance on state-owned roads and highways. An increase in maintenance will extend the life of our roads and highways. This will make federal construction funds available for other important highway projects in the state. There are other factors which make increasing the motor fuel tax an important issue for this legislature to address. In January, the U.S. General Accounting Office released a report entitled Highway Funding, Alternatives for Distributing Federal Funds. The report did not make specific recommendations. However, the GAO did lay out seven alternatives for distribution of the nation's federal highway trust funds. In 4 of the alternatives, Alaska's overall share goes from $231 million, which we received in FY95, to approximately $40 million. In only one alternative, Alaska's best case in this report, the state's share goes from $231 million to $89 million. If Congress decided to adopt even the best GAO alternative, Alaska could stand to lose $191 million federal dollars for construction on our highways in the state. For this reason, the department believes it is prudent to indicate to other states and to Congress that we are doing all we can to maintain the transportation system we have and to show a commitment to maintain our transportation system in the future. Fortunately, at this time, the state has a strong advocate in Senator Stevens, who sits on the Senate Appropriations Committee. But the potential for losing valuable federal highway funds is still there. And even if we do manage to maintain the current level of funding through the next federal highway spending authorization, we can eventually expect a decline in federal highway funds for Alaska. The marine fuel tax increase, coupled with the dedicated fund, will provide the department with funding for a harbor transfer program. The program would involve funding capital projects for state-owned harbors to upgrade the facilities to a condition where the department could turn over the facilities to a local municipality. The department estimates that all but about 22 of the facilities currently owned by the state could reasonably be transferred in 5 years. The proposed program would basically get the state out of the harbor business.
Okay.
Concludes my testimony. If there are any questions.
Okay, thank you. I think that for the record, we ought to say that that you have a CS before you, which is the House State Affairs CS. The original bill that came out did not have the requirement that this piece of legislation would only take effect if we have a dedicated fund that is passed by the public this year. And separately, I had a resolution which established a dedicated fund to be a constitutional amendment for, started out being just for highway use tax, and then in the transportation committee, it was added in to include the marine fuels. And that constitutional amendment is currently in the finance committee. And this bill would be contingent upon the passage of that constitutional amendment, and not only to get out to the legislature, but also to get approved by a vote of the public. And that's basically what the committee substitute is. I think that what I'd like to have is a motion to have the CS, the document that we're working from. Representative Porter?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I would then move that we adopt for a working draft CS for HB 443 State Affairs, version M, Mike 3796.
Is there any objection, Representative Willis?
No, I wanted to ask a question.
Okay. No objection to putting the CBS before us? Then the CS is the document we'll be working from. You have a question, Representative Willis?
Yes. Mr. Keto, does the administration have a position on the constitutional amendment?
Through the chair, Representative Willis, the governor does support a constitutional amendment for transportation purposes. The resolution that is in House Finance is generally supported by the governor. There are a few suggestions, a couple of amendments that he is prepared to offer in House Finance Committee on Wednesday.
Thank you.
Representative Ivan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Could you clarify marine motor fuel taxes? And it says if the taxes will be dedicated to the mode from which the taxes were collected. I'm curious about, I believe you're using the navigable water definition. Is that the small river boats are also affected? And if those tax collected, where would it go?
Through the chair, Representative Ivan, the tax is actually collected at distribution points throughout the state, not at point of sale. If the distributor believes that a percentage of that tax or percentage of that fuel or most of that fuel is being used in marine craft, then he will file with the Department of Revenue to pay the 5-cent currently marine fuel tax. I believe that's correct, but there is a representative from the Department of Revenue that might be able to clarify that.
Okay. Someone here from the Department of Revenue, would you like to pull up a stool and be at the end of the table here in case we have any questions from you? Did you come and did you want to testify, or did you want to just be available for questions?
Testify.
Okay. Maybe what we should do is take your testimony next then and then come back. You can both sit there because we'll probably have questions for both of you. Come on up.
All right.
And let's take your testimony and see, maybe you might answer our questions.
Okay. I can try to do that. For the record, my name is Bob Bartholomew, and I'm the Assistant Director of the Income and Excise Tax Division in the Department of Revenue. And I wanted to speak just mainly to the fiscal notes, just to clarify the contents. And the fiscal note was prepared prior to the CS, and the primary change where we show
We don't have a copy of the fiscal notes, any of us.
Okay, well, I can just talk to it.
Okay, all right.
Basically, the fiscal note showed revenue in FY97, which if the bill was amended under the CS to tie to the dedicated fund, there would be no new revenues collected in FY97. The dedicated fund would go into place July 1st of 1997, which is FY98. So you would begin collecting the increased tax in sync with the dedicated fund, and we show in the first year the increased revenue from raising the motor fuel, the highway motor fuel tax, the marine tax, and the bill also removes the exemption for gasohol. The increased revenue would be $59.5 million, just under $60 million. There are also clause in there that basically increase, which was passed by the legislature in the early 1980s, my understanding was due to potential sale of Delta barley to help provide, you know, gasohol back then. So it's still on the books. The city of Anchorage is required by the EPA to use oxygenated fuels for 4 months each winter due to the air quality standards. And what we're seeing is there's also now beginning to be year-round usage of that fuel. So we don't lose the revenue just for the 4 months in the winter. We're starting to see anywhere from 2 to 4 million gallons a month being used throughout the year. So in FY95, we lost 2.4 million in revenue, and the projection for this year is $6 million. We also have in the fiscal note increased operating costs of $80,000, and that covers one revenue auditor, three, that would be stationed in Anchorage. Basically, we'll be increasing the motor fuel tax from currently just under $40 million to over $100 million. And with rates for being changed for the off-highway tax, for the marine fuel tax, we think educating of the taxpayers as well as the potential compliance issues that are going to come up, that it's reasonable to expect we're going to need to increase our compliance effort so that we can make sure that that people that owe the tax are paying the tax and that they understand the changes. And then that would drop to annually then $72,000 a year continuing. You wouldn't have to buy equipment except for the first year. That basically summarizes the fiscal note to show just what the impact, I guess, of the increases would be. And I think we can go to question.
Well, the question that Representative Ivan had, which Sam tried to respond to, is how do they identify all of the fuels that go into boats and things that are on the water, and that is done at the distribution point as opposed to the point of sale. Could you explain to Representative Ivan so he can understand how that is determined? And I understand that the auditor that you're requesting would be overlooking that issue to see that a fair distribution would be done when they pay their taxes on the sale of those fuels.
Yes, through the chair, Representative Ivan. So currently, the motor fuel tax is paid by what's called a qualified motor fuel dealer, which is primarily the wholesaler. And when they sell the fuel to their customers, they have to make a determination of the ultimate use of that fuel. And then they report on a tax return to the Department of Revenue how that fuel is going to be used. And there are, I think, situations where fuel is sold to a retail gas station, and it can go into a car or into a boat. And currently, you know, you'd be paying the highway rate. And so the determination is made by the qualified dealer, and at this point, they've pretty much been operating, you know, there hasn't been a lot of issue around it. And as we raise the tax, there may have to be some additional guidelines provided so that where we have multiple uses of fuel, our objective would be to come up with a simple way for people to be able to report that and not have to create new reporting requirements.
Any other questions of either of these two gentlemen? Representative Olkin?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Could you explain Section 5 a little bit more thoroughly? Am I interpreting this correct, that is the consumer price index goes up, the tax will go up automatically?
Yes. Currently, both the original bill and the CS contain a clause that would direct the Department of Revenue on every even-numbered year to raise the tax equal to the prior 2 years' CPI. So it would automatically be indexed to inflation.
All I have to say about that is, well, that's convenient.
Any other questions? Representative Green?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chairman. If that were to happen, 2 years hence, we go up, round it off to a whole cent. And then 2 years later, we go up based on that rate rather than some fractional accumulation.
What we would do, I think the bill directs us to use January 1997 as the base. So if you're out 6 years, you would go...
Calculate back to that year.
Yeah,
how far? Rather than each... Okay.
Yeah, it would be a cumulative change. And so if you actually had a drop in the CPI, you would have a drop in your rate. But it would be cumulative starting from January.
It's not a cumulative round off. That's the thing I was after.
Right, you'd recalculate back from the base.
Okay.
Any other questions or comments before we go up to... We have people online on teleconference that want to testify. You can just sit there if you'd like. So we may have some more questions from you after we hear from the people online. We have the mayor of Hoonah online.
Yes, good morning. It was clarified during the conversation on the water fuel tax. So thank you.
Thank you. Okay, we have in Kenai, Mr. Bernie Smith from Tesoro.
Good morning, Madam Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Bernie Smith. I represent Tesoro Alaska Petroleum. I'm sorry I'm not able to testify in person, but I would like to make a couple of comments about the new CES. I believe, number one, that rates going from 8 cents to 22 cents as a 14-cent increase in 1 year. Also, if you tie that in with the Anchorage and possibly Fairbanks of reducing or eliminating the gasohol exemption, that is another 8 cents on top of that. That's 22 cents of increase at the pump, at least for 4 months out of the year for Anchorage and Fairbanks. That seems a little steep to us, and we believe that that would really put a burden on some of the people that use the you know, the gasoline to get back and forth to work. So we feel that the increase that you have in front of you right now is a little more steeper than what needs to happen. We would support, though, the constitutional amendment to the degree that gives the voters a chance to vote on this. We feel that that is a correct way of handling a increase of tax that would affect so many people. On the waterborne tax, I would just like to make a couple of comments on that. Right now, you have a 5% increase, 5 cents a gallon tax on motor fuel, on waterborne tax, and our that is also affecting in-state refineries as it is, being able to furnish in-state fuel and products to some of the larger users of this waterborne diesel. In particularly in the areas of the trampers and the process, these processors are coming in into the Alaskan waters or outside the Alaskan waters, they will bring in their diesel fuel and motor fuel for their vessels and park them 3 miles outside of state waters. And right now we're having a hard time to compete with those with that 5 cents that we have to pay the differential right now. But you add another 3 cents to that, and we probably would not be able to compete with the Seattle people that bring in their fuel and park outside of the 3 mile water line. So we would like you to look at that once again and not try to increase where your in-state refiners are not going to be able to compete. We would support, though, that the 5 cents that you have now in the waterborne tax go to the be dedicated and go to the harbors. I think that's good to have the state out of that business anyway. So that's kind of where Tesoro sits on this right now, and I'd be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Bernie. I do have a question. This is Jeanette. Your concern about raising 22 cents in 1 year is well taken. What kind of a phasing of taxes would you support?
Well, Madam Chairman, I'm not sure that I would be able to answer that without consulting with a couple of our people. But in just loose talking, I think that we're going to, if you raised it to say a nickel a gallon the first year, and that was dedicated along with the other 14 cents that's already there, or the 22 cents, or the 8 cents that's already there, and dedicated that to the road fund, I think that's appropriate.
One other question, and has to do with the people buying their fuel in Seattle and not coming and buying ours because of the additional marine fuel tax. Is the difference between the amount that they pay for fuel in Seattle and what we pay for fuel, this is without tax, here in Alaska, that much that additional tax would make them bring the fuel in?
Oh, absolutely. We already have seen that on the nickel that you have already taxed. That they are bringing in barges and parking them outside the 3 mile limit right now. So that we are competing with that as it is, and we get a portion of that. But if you, we feel that if you raise that another 3 cents, that would increase, just make it more profitable for them to bring in their barges from outside.
Gosh, that's really hard for me to accept when we have all this oil and gas here. It's really, you know, the people that I talk to out there in the public just don't understand, and I guess that the oil industry and the refining industry is going to have to do a better job of explaining it to the people in Alaska, why it is that we have an oil-based economy here, and yet that we can't compete and people can come in and compete with us and sell it cheaper to us than what we can have it here ourselves. So that's just a statement. I'm not looking for any answer on that, but it is something that I hear all the time, and it is very, very distressing to have to deal with that issue. I don't know what the answer is, but we need to work on that. So I understand your concerns, and thank you for your testimony today. Does anyone else have any questions of Mr. Smith? Then let's go on to Sitka. We have Albert Snelling.
Good morning to you. My name is Al Snelling, and I work for Samson Tug and Barge. And I'd like to make a few comments on this particular bill. I just received the work draft with the additional Section 7, and I'll comment on it at the end if I could, please.
Go ahead.
Samson Tug and Barge is a line haul freight company. We operate out of, homeported out of Sitka. And we have a terminal in Seattle where we load our outbound cargo, and we come northbound to Sitka, Cordova, Valdez, Kodiak, Sandpoint, King Cove, Dutch Harbor, and ADAC. We have 4 lease tugs, 3 of our own tugs, and we have all kinds of trucking equipment, forklifts, cranes, and generator sets, which we use to keep our frozen product cold. And the prime mover for them, of course, is diesel engines. And what we did is, in looking at this bill, we combined our totals for 1994 and 95 and averaged those out on the total amount of money we spent on fuel. And looking at those numbers and the numbers that we're estimating with the new port that we picked up in 96, we may have expenses of well over $1 million in fuel costs just to operate these tugs and all this other equipment. And then we kind of tried to apply this to the increases that we're looking at. The proposal here, and we could take the total amount of tax that we're going to have to pay should this become a law and operate one of our facilities and pay all their fuel costs for 1 year just on the tax that we would have to pay. And something I think that we should think about is, you know, you take out your diesel truck and you're hauling a container down the road and you fill up a 100-gallon tank. With the proposal, you're going to pay $22 in taxes. But if I pull in a tug to one of the terminals here in Alaska and say, fill it up, and they put 50,000 gallons in there, I'm paying $4,000 in state tax just on that 50,000 gallons of fuel. That's quite a bit of money. And you start running that over the number of 4 lease tugs and 3 you operate yourself coming out of Seattle. That's a long haul to ADAC and back, so there's a lot of fuel consumed and a lot of money involved. And I believe it was Representative Ivan. I'd like to just maybe kind of put this in layman's terms for folks who live in the smaller communities like we do here in Sitka and Rango and some of the others farther westward is, looking at the average price of gasoline at the pump now, I pull in with my pickup truck and put in high test gas, for example, and it's going to cost me $1.75 a gallon. If I trailer my boat in, it's going to cost me $32 to fill up my outboard because they don't have a differentiation of that price at the pump. But the other thing we have to look at is if that price is going to be on there, there's going to wind up being a surcharge on trucking fees to haul your groceries of probably 2-3%. So it's not just 14 cents a gallon for gasoline. We're looking at some long-term things on trucking charges and boat charges to get cargo in and out. So seeing my time's about to run short here, two things you should consider, I think, is cutting even more government spending and even maybe looking at privatization of some of these government operations versus putting such a heavy tax on industry.
Thank you, Mr. Snelling. And now in Anchorage, we have Frank Dillon.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. My name is Frank Dillon. I'm the Executive Director of Alaska Trucking Association, and we have a real interest in fuel taxes. Diesel fuel is the lifeblood that the trucking industry runs on. Fuel taxes in a trucking operation, or fuel costs in a trucking operation, can be anywhere from 12 to 15% of the total costs. I was pleased to see the CS for House Bill 443 today, because it certainly takes some steps in the right direction towards improving the way we handle money and pay for maintenance needs in transportation in the state. I'll confine my remarks today to only the highway taxes and highway mode. The CS that requires a dedicated fund and a constitutional amendment, we believe, is absolutely going in the right direction. However, we have two problems in the bill as it currently exists in the CS. One of them is the rate of taxation, the 22 cents. We do not believe that that's justified by needs right now at the Department of Transportation in terms of maintenance. We believe the figure would be closer, a reasonable figure would be closer to 18 cents a gallon. Second portion that we find objectionable in the CS is the question of indexing this price to the CPI. As far as we're concerned, that is an open checkbook. It is not a needs-based sort of taxation, and we would intend to resist that and ask that it be deleted from the bill. We are advocates and have been for some time of a dedicated fund. We don't view it as a panacea, and we understand that it is a two-edged sword. But at this point in time, we think that we do need to have a better way to focus money raised from highway users so that they go into projects that are benefit to those folks who are paying the tax.
Thank you, Frank.
Thank you. If there are any questions, we would be happy to respond and answer them.
Okay, I appreciate it.
I'd also like to say that Mr. Snelling was absolutely correct. We're operating right now in the trucking industry on some very thin margins as a result of competition. And that's a good thing in the sense, Madam Chairman, that it provides low-cost transportation services. But it does mean that any increase in cost, and particularly the significant increase that we're looking at, even under a 10-cent increase in the tax, will be passed along to the consumers in the state. There's no possible way for the industry to absorb any increase in fuel taxes. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, we have one more person here that wanted to testify, Brad Pierce.
Madam Chairman, my name is Brad Pierce. I'm a policy analyst with the Office of Management and Budget, and I was a staff to the Long-Range Financial Planning Commission that came up with this bill. Sam and Bob have covered most everything from the administration standpoint, so I can speak to the thinking that the commission used in coming to this this piece of legislation. The revenues from this bill figured prominently in the commission's long-range plan for the state. And they were also very interested that the increase in the motor fuel tax be tied to a dedicated fund, that people should see a better maintenance of their roads for an increase in their taxes. So with that, I guess that's it. I can answer any questions you might have. There was some talk here about indexing. I believe the reason that the commission wanted to index the rate was, I don't believe the motor fuel tax hadn't been raised since, what, 82 or
61.
So that's how we got to having the lowest motor fuel tax rate in the nation. And raising it to the national average was the intent of the commission. And the idea was not to have to come back to the legislature periodically to keep up with inflation. So that was the reason that the indexing clause was put in there.
Okay, thank you. Representative Robinson?
Yeah, Brad, so on a national average, is it 24 cents? I mean, or is that the high level? I'm trying to remember what the study showed, and how did you come up with the 22 cents?
The 22 cents is the national
that
average.
That is the national average,
yes.
Okay.
Well, you know, and on that point, we hear testimony that our base price is so much more than others, that if that was a complete internal issue, it wouldn't be a problem if we were putting a tax on to take care of our own selves, but we have a direct relationship in many cases with the outside interests, which can provide our base price at a lot less. You heard the testimony from the person who does the tug, and you know, one of the things that I guess I'd like to say, especially since you worked on the long-range financial planning issue, and some of the trauma that we've experienced with that report, which I think was a fine report, and I think they did some really good work, and I'm not questioning them, but I think that one of the things that we have to determine in this state, just exactly what the level of spending is that it ought to be, based on the per capita and what we can sustain over the long term. And we have, not only do we have the lowest rate of tax on gasoline, we also don't have an income tax, we don't have sales tax, we still get a permanent fund, and there's lots and lots of things that we're used to doing, and it's going to take a little time for people to sort out in their mind just exactly what parts of government they want to spend and how much they're willing to spend for it. So to take a real drastic approach and dump all those things in people's laps this year, I think we're going to have to take some small pieces at a time to be able to get the support from the public to do these kinds of things and have it so that it's not going to have a devastating effect on the industry out here. We've heard conversations about the cutting the budget is going to have a devastating effect on the economy. Actually, imposing taxes can have even a more devastating tax effect on businesses that depend on being able to have a margin of profit in what they're doing. So I think we have to take a real cautious way. I support this thought and theory of getting the taxes up to some level that is more reasonable, but I think we're going to have to figure out a way to do it in a way that it is more stepped and so forth. On the Consumer Price Index, you probably all keep me hearing, so I need to tell you a little bit about my theory about deflation as opposed to inflation. If we ever wanted to get control of our finances, that'd be the only way to go. So I'm really not one that ties into Consumer Price Index because it's not necessarily as definitive as exactly what's happening out there in the economy as we think it is when we measure it. So I have a tendency to not like that indexing either, that automatic indexing, because it just promotes more automatic indexing. It's like a cancer that grows, and I'd rather take a little closer control over it. So for my own philosophy, as for what it's worth, I had to just share that with you this morning. Is there any other questions or comments? And I don't believe we're going to take any action on this bill today. Had a good hearing, and I'd like to hear from as many people, if there's others in the interest or committee members, on the issues of this bill. Representative Porter.
Just because I didn't look it up, Section 6 is the repeal of the existing provision of law. Do you know what that is?
Probably the exemption on
the gas
alcohol. Representative
Logan? I guess I had to associate myself with your comments about Section 5, the Consumer Price Index. I think it sets a somewhat bad precedent. We could do away with policy setters if, you know, all of our revenues were just and automatically went up according to the Consumer Price Index. And when it's appropriate time, I'd like to move an amendment.
Well, I'd really rather not take any amendments at this point in time that are not been presented ahead. I think we should do a little bit more work and be happy to.
Okay.
Between now and the next meeting, I'd like to meet with the administration and see if anyone else is interested in seeing if we can come up with some amendments, or anyone has any amendments. I'd like to have you prepare them between now and Thursday and see what we could do with this bill. I think it's a bill that we need to put forward, but I want to be sure that it's going forward in a way that can be accepted and it can get all the way to the top, you know. So that's my goal. Representative Olkin?
One other point, I'd just like to applaud the concept in the CS of tying this issue to essentially to vote to the people through the constitutional amendment. I feel real strongly that we should, at every chance we get, while it's not constitutionally mandated, and I would like to see it constitutionally mandated, like to see as many taxes as possible tied to the vote of the people, and having said that.
Are there any other questions or comments about the bill this morning? Thank you all for coming, and since we don't have anything else on our agenda, then this concludes our meeting this morning.